Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from the not-so-great White North here in Toronto, Canada, and we are paying tribute to International Women's Month, and we are paying tribute to African women in particular and women in general. And we begin our show today with some music from Gil Scott-Heron, who pays tribute to Fannie Lou Hamer.
My career and the things that I wanted to do, poetry-wise and otherwise, was to say something about folks who have made immense sacrifices so that your lives could be better. And the reason I say this is because they were going out to try and get things for you that they already had. You see, when somebody is really interested in you, they will not stop working when they get it. They will make sure that they keep on working so that you can get it. This is the nature of sacrifice. Now, whether or not, I mean, you can always stand back and find fault. You find different reasons that you don't want to participate, because the real reason being that you're lazy and that you don't really feel like going out there to make this commitment. But understand that these are folks that you owe some respect to, whether you like their tactics or their political stances or not. These are folks who made immense sacrifices because they risked their lives. You see, somebody who risked his life for something is somebody who is really committed to it, regardless of whether or not you like their tactics. I found out when I was very young, I lived in Tennessee, about a lady that had made immense sacrifices for us, had gone down and got beaten, and had the dog sicked on her, had the hoses put on her. This was a woman named Fannie Lou Hamer. I mentioned so many of these names because this is the essence of Black history. Learning about who these people are and what they did for you and what you can pick up and do for other folks if you are so inclined. To understand that this is where we are now. This was not a destination. This was just a stop along the way. That folks never intended for us to stop once we got a cup of TV or once we got a chance to see ourselves on ESPN. They felt as though that's something we already supposed to have. So for us to feel as though we have accomplished something by getting something we paid for a long time ago, there's no victory. I'm saying the day we started to pay taxes, we would do all them things. So when you saw people marching and demonstrating and stuff, they weren't going to get nothing they weren't supposed to. They already paid for that. It's just like if you pay for something at the store and they don't send it to you, you got to go get it. So when we pay these taxes and things, when you pay for taxes, you are entitled to the rights under the Constitution, the Bill of Rights and all these things. You're already supposed to have that. The marches and the demonstrations and things were because we did not have what we had already paid for. Now, in order to go and get these things, we would call things like militants. They had the goddamn guns. These were terms that they used to alienate us from one another. They knew that our grandmothers and our grandfathers didn't want to hear nothing about no militants. So they figured if they call us that, this will divide us and keep us from one another. Always understand that your commitment is first to your family, to your folks. And whatever somebody else said, that's just something he said. That's just something he said to keep you from being unified, to keep you from being together and to have yourself together and to stay together with the folks who got you as far as you went. These are folks who started off trying to help you when you could not help yourself. The folks that got you your education, that got you your diapers, that got you your food, that got you the hell up on your feet so that you could go somewhere in this time. This was not the idea. Sister Fannie Lou Hamer was a short little woman from a place called Ruleville, Mississippi. Now, Ruleville, Mississippi ain't making no big impression on no map, because it was not a large place, but it brought us a large woman, a large figure in our history, because this woman independently decided to evolve a strategy for voter registration. Now, she felt as though it was important that we register to vote, because until you register to vote, you cannot be called for jury duty. Now, if you want justice, you got to be in all parts of that. You got to be the judge sometimes, but you got to be registered so you can be the jury all the time. Make sure that you can have some part to play. I ain't telling you who to vote for. I ain't even telling you to vote. But I'm saying register to vote so that you can be called, because if you want to take part in the justice system, you see, it's supposed to be justice, liberty, and equality. If justice coming first. This was what Sister Fannie Lou Hamer came with. Justice supposed to be first. Let's work on that. You got to register to vote in order to be called for jury duty. So she became involved with that. We wrote a song for her. Sister Fannie Lou was very important to me. And the best way I could express myself sometimes was to write something down, a poem or an idea, and try to apply it to the things that I knew about music and piano, and try to make the song feel like the words felt. You know, you see, if the words and the music don't come together, then you got two songs. Sometimes you just get a rhythm and you throw some words on top of it, you call it a song. Nah, 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 nah. The music has to say the same things that the words say in order to have a song. In my lifetime, I've been in towns, but there was no freedom or future around. I've been in places where you could not eat or take a drink of water wherever you please. And now that I meet you again in the middle of a mountain where I'm reaching all out from within. Yes, and all I can think of are chapters and seasons of all of the places we've been. See, I'm not such an old man, so don't get me wrong. I'm the latest survivor of constantly strong. But I've been to Mississippi and down city streets. I've seen days of plenty and nights nothing to eat. But I'm not too happy about the middle of a mountain, so soon I'll be climbing again. Yes, and all I can think of are chapters and seasons of all of the places we've been. Raised up in a small town in the country down south, so I've been close enough to know what a person's about. And placed on this mountain with a rare chance to see dreams once envisioned by folks much braver than me. And since then I've got me to the middle of a mountain where I can't stop to give up on them. Thinking about all of the places we've been. Mind racing back to all of the places we have been, a lot of places, yeah. All of the places we've been in. Yeah, stay together, always together. Sister, you say stay together, always together. See if we can make you stay together, always together. Sister, you say stay together, always together. And so I say stay together, always stay together.
Nanga Def, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. Nanga Def is Wolof to all of the people in Senegal and the diaspora and all of the people that speak Wolof in West Africa and around the world. And we are going to have an exciting show for you today. We're going to have continue our tribute to International Women's History Month, and we're going to be speaking with Tiki Mercury Clark of Toronto, Canada at 3:30. We're going to do a rewind with Izili Danto from Haiti, a Haitian living in New York City, or living in the New York area. We're going to be paying tribute to, we're going to be playing some spoken word music from some women from Washington, D.C. We're going to be playing some Marlena Shaw and some good Shirley Brown, so on and so forth. And during this first half hour, we're going to begin with Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, with Harold Melvin and Theodore Pendergrass singing lead. And then we're going to go to the Jamaican man, David Oliver, a brother who was born in the United States of Jamaican heritage, so he referred to himself as the Jamaican man. He did a song called Miz, and we want you to sit back and relax and listen to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio.
My eyes close and I long for them to open, hoping that the vision I see is reality. Can it be, or is it just a dream? My African queen, her skin is like silk and soothes me. How can this be such incomparable beauty? Her white teeth contrast with her beautiful brown gums. I am numb. I look deep into her eyes, leaves me deaf, blind, and dumb. But now my senses come awake, and I ache for her presence is strong enough to make the strongest man's heart break. As she sits on her throne, I moan for no woman that beautiful should be left alone. But am I worthy enough to be her king? Well, we have the strong bond that real love brings. She sits with poise, making the biggest of men the littlest of boys. She's the object of my desire. Her comforting smile has my soul on fire. Her elaborate garments, her jewels gleam. Could this all be a dream, my African queen? I awake and look around. I'm all alone, so I frown. But now as I look out, I realize that it wasn't just a dream. For all black women are as beautiful as African queens.
Beautiful woman is an ebony woman, soft satin hue, so made of blue, and her lamb's wool. Her bunny tree and Miss Cleopatra. Ooh, she wished she could match her. Makes her ebony true. She moans, Lord, she moans, Lord, have mercy on me. Oh, when she's tired and blue, how can she be bright fancy clothes
my cares and woes.
Oh, see oh, my Ebony. Ebony woman.
She's my
Ebony woman.
Ebony woman. The land rich black soil. Precious as oil. But in this crazy mixed up world, she's a jewel.
So proud.
Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada, and we are continuing to pay tribute to women from Africa and the world. And this is International Women's History Month, and we're going to be speaking with Tiki Mercury Clark at 3:30. Tiki Mercury Clark is based here in Toronto, Canada. At 3 o'clock, we're going to be have some hot talk from women, some spoken word and music, and a lot of talk and a lot of great music from some of the sisters. And we are going to be listening to a rewind of Azealie Danto from Haiti at 2:30. We have great shows on Uhuru Radio. We have Omali Ishatella speaks. Omali Ishatella, who is the chair of the African People's Socialist Party and the African Socialist International. You can listen to Omali Ishatella speaks Sunday before us. We can also, you can listen to Africa Live, which is hosted by Didon Sankara. That's on today, and you can, it was on earlier. You can also listen to Reparations in Action with Penny Hess. That was broadcast earlier. Golden Sunday Sounds, a great show by Ron Bob Simple, one of his two shows. He also does Caribbean Forum, which comes on at Saturday. You can also catch Maitho on African International. And, of course, one of the one of my favorite shows is Black Agenda Report, or Black Agenda Radio with Glenn Ford and Nellie Bailey. And Nellie Bailey is an organizer with the Harlem Tenant Council, and housing is a burning issue with African people, burning, red-hot issue. And if you wanted to email us, you can do that by going to dj@uhururadio.com. The Skype option is Uhuru Radio, if you wanted to you know, check us out by Skype. If you want a phone, you can call 727-565-1599. If you're in the United Kingdom, you can call 020-8133-6629. And we're going to continue with some great music from one of the, I think Ray Charles. Oh, I mentioned his name. Ray Charles said that David Ruffin was the greatest singer of the 60s, and that is a subjective. That's Ray's opinion. It might be my opinion, too, but we're going to listen to David Ruffin, the man with the incredible range. This is David Ruffin and a song called Common Man.
Let's get it together one more time for David as he joins us with a tune from his latest album that happens to be one of my favorites. It's entitled Common Man, Mr. David Ruffin.
Yeah, I have dreamed the dream of every common man. I have sworn by my blood, as your man, my love, that one day, I promise one day your heartache will stop. But I've never, 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 never changed. I've never changed one single grain of sand. To you, baby, but just loving a common man.
I want to thank you to see you.
I thought that I found you so. Didn't have to worry about being a common man. You said, David, you don't have to worry about rising to the top. You said, I didn't have to swear by my blood. But oh, baby, that one day your heartache would stop. Then you put your arms around me and you said, you never, 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 never cared. If I'd never change one single grain of sand, you said, I love you, baby. I love you for just being a common man. Well, my gratitude just keep on growing, yeah. Recognizing me, I thank you, baby. Respecting me, yeah, I won't thank you, baby. For in a time of need, oh, I thank you, baby. Oh, for my gratitude, for respecting me, baby. For just being a calm man. Oh, I wanna thank you, baby. For in a time of need, I wanna thank you.
So, Mr. Ruffin, we finally crossed paths. Mm-hmm. It's great to have you here. It seems like I've been missing you lately. You were in Chicago while I was out here.
Right.
And when I was out here, you were in Chicago, you were out here. Your album, I understand, is produced by a good friend of mine, Mr. Bobby Miller. Is that the Bobby Millers from
Bobby
Chicago?
Bobby Miller from Chicago, yes.
He used to
he
work
told
with
me to sing his love, too.
Yeah, some great tunes on the album, and I wasn't kidding when I said...
Common Man?
Common Man is one of my favorite. The Blood Donors Needed, for those in the audience who may have missed some...
You are listening to Diasporic Music on the Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, and you are listening to Diasporic Music on the Uhuru Radio. We were listening to the music of Davis Eli... David Ruffin. He is a... The lead singer of The Temptations, and recorded My Girl, which my biggest songs of all times in terms of popularity. We also heard from, we kicked the set off with way, way back there with Dwayne Morgan from Toronto. We forgot to mention Dwayne Morgan, who is a very good friend of ours. We also heard from Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, and David Oliver, the Jamaican man who did Miz. And we're going to be speaking with Ezili Danto. This was an interview that we did 2 weeks ago. So this is a rewind. The situation in Haiti is always a burning issue, and we wanted to keep that out in front of our listeners. And we're going to rewind Ezili Danto. And... joining us on the line is Ezili Danto of the Haitians Lawyers Leadership Network. And we have had Ezili on many times, and we wanted to talk to Ezili about a couple of things. The current situation in Haiti, one, we wanted to get her thoughts on International Women's Month, and also her thoughts on Black History Month or African Liberation Month. But first of all, we wanted to welcome Ezili to the airwaves of Diasporic Music. How are you doing today?
I'm very good, thank you. Thank you so much for having me in.
Now, the situation in Haiti is, as usual, is critical, but basically what is taking place as we speak on March 16th, 2014.
Right. You know, today what I was thinking about when I was thinking about what to say for this interview, Norm, is Gil Scott-Heron's midnight hour, you know, that moment right before liberation, that,
right.
that time that we have to capture in even doing the oppression, even as the evil is raping you and disemboweling your children, your future, there is a space. And because I'm a voodooist, I'm gonna speak with that language today. Because, you know, you spoke to me and asked me to speak about African Liberation Month, and I've been doing this my whole entire life. So I kind of feel like at this moment, you know, I can't fake being a young one. I can't fake it anymore. I can't say that I don't know what is happening to our people globally, and then I have to go learn more, because in the last right. 20 years, I just can't do that. So I'm going to do something called the clearing in Vodun, which is what Cecile Fatima, who is sort of the woman who chose who would be the leader of the Haitian Revolution at Bakaima on August 14, 1791. And she was the living library of Esli Danton. That is the irreducible essence of the Black mother. And what she did for 4 years before the revolution was go around to raise consciousness all over the plains and hills and valleys of Haiti during slavery time, when we were not human beings but livestock. We are at that space again. And it's not chattel slavery in terms of our hands being tied and our mouth tied, but it is equally and even worse, because it's the consciousness that we don't have, that the people like Cecile Fatima and Toya and Granditon and all of the women you'll never hear about with regards to the Haitian Revolution and who we are as a people, you know, all that they were. This is something I was looking at your piece, Norman, when you were talking about the historical continuity that's destroyed by white supremacy. Well, essentially, you know, white supremacy cuts us off from who we are, from our source, from our parents. And so, you know, we end up being the Negroes that are trying to find space within their system that's destroying us, you know. So someone just
right.
posted on my Facebook, you know. So that's what I see. So today in Haiti, we have an occupation that has been strict for the last 20 years. Today, we have, for instance, you know, it's no longer this coverage of earthquake. We're going to rebuild Haiti with earthquake funds, because everybody knows that $9 billion, the Hillary and Clinton fund, that's what it was, leaving little footprints in Haiti. So I'm speaking from that midnight hour, that moment in time, that jazz space and place where we... Well, it's right before Liberation Day. That's
right.
the space that we're in right now, right before that Liberation Day. And those of us who are sort of in the field Negroes out here, not working on the plantation, outside of it, looking to take it down, you know, we see what our brothers and sisters, even our husbands and wives, don't see, because they're sort of so integral into the system. So we're the crazy one. Right now, the Haitian government has gotten rid of this whole veil that this is about, you know, Haiti reconstruction. It really is about, you know, implementing white supremacy, depopulation, dispossession, and taking Haiti's land. So at the moment, we have one of the crises is that the puppet U.S. government in Haiti, Matéli Lamothe, have just in May of 2013 decided that all offshore islands are going to be property of the state, and that the people living there can be taken off the place at will. It's going to be tourist zones, because what the Haitian government wants is for Haiti to look like the Dominican Republic, like Jamaica, like Bahamas, because for them, white supremacy is development. So the fact
so they're trying
that
to, they're trying to develop. I don't want to cut you, but they're trying to.
To
develop the Haiti as a tourist spot, so they're going to make it safe for the Europeans to come there.
Very safe. As a matter of fact, so safe that they've created a security force just for the tourists. So you know what that means for the locals.
Okay.
And so in particular right now, that security force, there's an offshore island in Haiti that has about 20,000 people on it, and a lot of those folks are descendants of African Americans who Lincoln was trying to get rid of the blacks after Civil War. They ended up in Isle Avache, which is the space that we're talking about right now. And the people there, and I want to just take a moment to just concentrate and tell you that they are back into the hills. They're in Maroonage. They've become maroons because the puppet government has brought bloodhound dogs to find the leaders, go house by house to take them to take them to prison. They have one guy in prison that we know at the moment. His name is Jean Lamy Martinez. He was the community radio station person in that island, a person who has been there for many generations, comes from an activist family. And the issue is that they have confiscated right now 20 families' property. They have razed to the ground the only forest on that island to make an asphalt, to make an airport for the tourists that they're hoping to bring in. And they're looking to take the coastline. This is a beautiful beach. It's 52, I think, of the most beautiful beaches in the world or whatever for Isle Avache. And so they basically are saying that black people don't know what to do with coastal lands and sea. And so they're taking the poor fishermen off of a particular place at Kai Kok to build. They're going to build, they say, 1,500 units, 2,500 villas for sale to foreigners. And so the people are protesting the fact that they're going to take their lands. They have taken some lands and haven't given compensation, even though there was like a lot of promise. And of course, the militarization. We are publishing the people's voice. Right now, they're not talking anymore in the way that they were before, because they're all are subject to arrest, like Lamy. So that's the most that's one of the big situations in Haiti at the moment. So we're asking.
Where? Who besides yourself? Who is publishing this information? How is this word getting out? Final Call or Pan African Newswire? First of all,
it's nowhere. You have to look at, there are Haitian outlets putting it out. There's a few other folks that are doing it. So go to if you go to a Free Haiti Movement page on Facebook, you will see all the various folks that are putting it out. The media just came on, the mainstream media, Associated Press, Trenton Daniels just had a piece, and I if you go on my website at ezvidonpo.com, I talk about it, where,
right,
you know,
right.
Basically they're giving us the State Department line, the Haitian government line, to say that they're not going to evict anyone, they haven't evicted anyone, that they're working things out with the population. They don't tell you about the guy who's in jail. They don't tell you that they replaced the community radio station and created a new one, and just scuttled the old one. So they're not telling you any of those things. They're basically saying they're going to create 2,000 jobs and that this is development for Haiti. Now, I want to point out to people, like I point out in pieces, we have a couple of pieces out. Black.
I don't want to cut you, but I wanted to say that the Burning Spear had, I think you had a piece in the Burning Spear a couple of weeks ago, so on our news.
Oh, really? Really? I didn't know that. Thank you so much. I mean,
right.
You know, we're working so hard sometimes, we don't see who picks up our stuff.
Right.
So truly appreciate that. I apologize for the people I'm not going to name. I know that San Francisco Bayview,
Mary Ratcliffe, right, Mary.
There you go, okay?
Right.
I mean, this woman is 75 years old. I mean, forever this lady has taken up the voice of the powerless, and she always stands with us. And she did a piece on her called Haiti's Not for Sale. I know Black Agenda Report. Thank you for telling me about Burning Spears. So there are some folks who are picking us up, and the people in that island is asking for three things. They want, of course, the dogs to be gone. They went from having just two policemen on that island to having 115 heavily armed, U.S.-trained policemen in there going house to house with photos looking for the leaders and so forth. So they want, they're asking for three things. The May 10th, 2013 decree that where the president of Haiti declared all of the offshore islands in Haiti to be tourist zones. They want that to be rescinded. They want to maintain their property. They're saying that, you know, it's not that we don't want improvement, but we don't want you to come and take our food sovereignty, you know, where we were fishing to eat, where we were, you know, the mangoes and a lot of fruits on that island. And that island provides, like, okai, the other, you know, on the mainland, it's actually what provides those people with food. So when they take all that fertile land and make, you know, 2,500 condos for foreigners in it and then create apartheid. I mean, I heard one guy before he went to prison, Lamif, was saying, and this other guy named Gati, basically, they were both saying how, you know, there are people that are 75 years old who spend their whole entire life as fishermen and with their house by the sea or whatever. Now they all are being forced out without a voice. So that's part of what's going on in Haiti. Your audience probably also know that the UN brought us cholera as part
cholera,
of their mission,
right,
in Haiti. Cholera. So recently, Obama, the so-called first black president, just sided with the UN to say that the Haiti cannot bring legal action for over 10,000 Haitians dead and over 800,000 Haitians infected. And
I definitely don't want to cut you, but how is he justified making a statement like that?
Immunity. That the UN has immunity.
No, but I'm saying about how.
So,
he said the UN has immunity.
Yeah. They're basically coming in and saying that the UN has immunity and can't be, and they're asking for a dismissal of the case. But it's sort of like par for the course. It's like thinking about the situation is that the power elites own the courts, own everything, and they manipulate everything. So they manipulate everything in Haiti to make more profit, whether it's cholera, whether it's the earthquake, whether, you know, all bodies are being used in exactly the same way, except, you know, I think I saw someone who showed fascism is sort of like oppression that's, you know, not in color, and then capitalism is oppression that has its balloons and colors, but it's really not capitalism, because Haitians are capitalist. Now, if you go to Haiti, and I mean, I say that only to the extent of saying, I mean, we're community people, we live in Lacou, we live in community, but we're always selling our goods and haggling with each other at the market, and, you know, our informal economy. You know, if you were looking at what real capitalism should be or socialism should be, you know, Haiti exemplifies all of that. Americans and the global elite are about monopolies. They all, you know, create monopolies to control everything and make us their put us in servitude. So that's why that's our situation at the moment. But how do we survive that situation? We must not be disconnected from our roots. We must stand in that midnight hour. And in that midnight hour, in that space, you know, right before liberation, you know, there is Sisi Fatima, the living library of Esri Danto, the divine mother, the warrior mother. There is Bibi Magritte, you know, the woman who, when the mulatto sons of France assassinated the Haiti's founding father, you know, she took all the pieces of him and gave him a burial and gave us our dignity. These women who stand against the tide, like Grantoya, who was the woman that raised the greatest hero who ever lived, Haiti's founding father. I mean, she taught him how to do hand-to-hand combat. She taught him how to, you know, tell the weather, how to heal himself with herbs, how to live off of the land. You know, this was a black woman that taught the greatest fighter in the world. And he was married to a woman who was an actual pacifist. So the
you're talking about Dessalines.
I'm talking about Dessalines. I'm talking about how Dessalines, the women around him,
right.
since we're looking at African liberation, what it's about, what it means, the role of women in it. So I'm taking the warriors who said no, who were the one and only people in a mass, in a sea of enslavement. But the warriors of Haiti came from all over the Caribbean. From Jamaica, we had Fookman, you know, we had Christophe Colomb, Henry Christophe, you know.
Did Christophe come from Grenada or from St. Lucia? Which territory did Christophe?
You know, I don't know. It was one of those British ones. It's not Jamaica.
St. Kitts, maybe. St. Kitts,
yeah.
Or,
right. You know? Yeah, it's but it's you know, because he was very, you know, into the English a lot.
Right.
So he came from that one of those islands. I'm not exactly sure which one, but I'll know it for the next time we
all right, okay.
But okay. So I just wanted to exclude the rest of the Caribbean when I talk about the Haitian revolutionaries. You know, the Haitians who said no. Because we are a people of struggle from everywhere.
Let me ask you this question. I know that, you know, Dessalines always gets this bad rap of being anti-everything and anti-everybody. But, I mean, Dessalines, the polls that fought on the side of the Haitians were granted Haitian citizenship. And it's my understanding, I've never been to Haiti, but they actually have a street called John Brown in Avenue or Boulevard in Haiti. So the whole thing about Dessalines being this madman is basically just a Western propaganda, it seems to me.
Well, Haitians, unless they're absolutely colonized, would not defend or give any credence to any of those things.
Right.
That brutality. In the history of humanity, no one is more brutal than the white man. No one, bar none. Jean-Jacques Dessalines, after we had suffered 300 years of their breeding our women like they were livestock, actually showed compassion towards the white folks, you know, which necessarily I would say that, you know, the first thing you teach your child is not to trust any of them, because there's nothing in world history to show that they're at all human beings with respect to their vis-a-vis their interaction with the black woman's child, in Haiti and anywhere else. So Jean-Jacques Dessalines gave citizenship to the Polish and some Germans and others in Haiti. They said, you know, you will now be known by the appellation as black, because you fought for liberty, and black means, you know, fighters for liberty. And so ideologically, that was something that was so scary to white folks, to white supremacy, that they would that he would reverse this sort of like inferiority word and make it something that's valuable, that's as black as primordial space, as black as, you know, the firmament from which creation sprung. So he gave us a way of going back to source, all of us, including the Europeans who showed character. So for instance, you know, there are places in Haiti where the descendants of the Polish people come from are still there. You can see it. So it wasn't like he just indiscriminately killed like Napoleon did. Napoleon, we were the first people that, you know, what the Nazis did to the Jews, they did to us. You know, they put us in hulls of ships and gassed us with poison gas. That's how they killed us. And there is a famous saying by General Leclerc, Napoleon's brother-in-law, that they had to kill. Now, there were, 450,000 people on the island during the revolution, and they wanted to, and 200,000 died for us to have our liberation.
You're telling me that I always thought that, you know, Walter Rodney talked about how the Germans practiced genocide on the people in Southwest Africa. Now I'm hearing that really the whole question of the genocide thing is, we could say that it started in Haiti, even before Namibia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The gassing, they put us in ships. Like, after there was no, they didn't take, the French did not take prisoners. Whereas, you know, we took prisoners and would exchange them and so forth and so on and let some go. The French would whatever, whoever they captured, they would put them back in a ship hall, in the hall of the ship, and poison them. And General Leclerc is known for saying, and I'm going to paraphrase it because I don't, you know, basically he said to Napoleon that you have to get rid of every person that wore an epaulette. You have to, and basically he said, you have to, because, you know, no one talks about it, but our children fought with us, the women, the children, I mean, the whole society stood up. So he said that you had to kill everyone, above the age of 12 years old. So that's what he planned to do in Haiti, was that anyone who was in their teens and up, they had to kill. That was their genocidal policy, and that's why Jean-Jacques Dessalines, when he rose after they had destroyed Toussaint Louverture, who was more moderate, who was always writing letters to Napoleon saying, I'm going to, you know, I'll be the leader of the blacks, you're the leader of the whites, and I'll hold Haiti for you as a colony. You know, they couldn't even see that. And just like this, Aline said, liberty or death, that's it. We're going to be a black, old, independent nation. And that is what we stand for today. That's why Haitians die. That's why they're back in Haiti. That's why there's still land in Haiti for them to take. Whereas in the Caribbean, they basically have taken everything.
We are going back to the fact that we are talking about International Women's Month, and basically the point that you were making, and I cut you off and took this thing another way, but Dessalines was taught by his mother and his wife, basically that's the point I want to, you know, when...
Oh, absolutely. You know, when we talk to these days, you know, everything is corporatized. Everything is about how to uplift the white supremacist system.
Right.
And corporations rule everything. And so the black folks who are given medals, who are recognized, and who are witnessed to, are the ones who position in the corporatocracy, the ones who become president and CEO or even president of the corporatocracy in the United States, as Barack Obama. But that's not what Cécile Fatima, Grandi Othon, Maïté Heureuse, Toya, Dédé, Basile, Marie-Jeanne, I'm naming them, and because we don't have enough time for me to tell you about all these women and who and what they are, but they are our roots. They are the ones that are with us in this midnight hour, right before liberation. They are the ones.
You know, I think we talked about that before.
I know, exactly. So I guess the point I think is pivotal to make is that this idea that there should be a month for Black History Month. For practical purposes, I get more work. People want to hear more from, you know, me doing March because it's Women's Month, or February because it's Black History Month. But at the end of the day, I'm in the struggle every moment of every day. And so I don't really pay attention to what the media is doing.
All right, but we have run out of time, and we had some problems. But I hope that you didn't waver on the on the broadcast, on the rebroadcast. The rebroadcast will be up up in a half an hour or so. Well, we will send that to you, and I thank you very much, and we'll definitely have you back. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. You're most welcome.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
It's now time to order your signed copy of Omali Ishitela's new book, The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Chairman Omali's groundbreaking political analysis shows the way forward for people looking for answers during this period of crisis for imperialism, a crisis that offers great opportunity for colonized peoples everywhere. This latest book by the founder and leader of the African Socialist International and the Uhuru Movement costs $29.99 and will come off the press this spring. Order now at burningspearmarketplace.com or by calling 727-824-5700, and your copy will be personally signed by the author. Call 727-824-5700 or visit burningspearmarketplace.com today to pre-order your commemorative signed copy of The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Uhuru means freedom.
Hey, Aisha, hold on. I'll walk with you. You know, this is going to be a great class.
I know. Yet I'm still trying to figure out how I can exactly use these skills.
The Uhuru Movement.
The Uhuru Movement?
Yes, the Uhuru Movement. They offer great opportunities to utilize these type of skills in the most meaningful ways. I mean, writers, photography, graphic design, journalism, videography, video editing, even radio broadcasting.
Wow, sounds great. I'm assuming you have to be pretty advanced.
Not at all. I mean, although experienced is welcome, it's not mandatory. You know, the Uhuru Movement, they will train you. Log on and sign up today at uhurunews.com, where your skills are wanted and needed. Whether reporting on local news, writing for an international newspaper, or hosting your own radio show, the Uhuru Movement is the place for you. Do you have a desire to work in sales, marketing, or administration? Do you have the talent for audio engineering? Log on and sign up today, uhurunews.com. Not just explaining the world, but changing the world.
Thank you, brother. I will definitely follow up today.
And hopefully you'll become a member like I am.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.
You're listening to the Uhuru Radio Network, being broadcast and simulcast around the world, including on WMXP 95.5 FM in Greenville, South Carolina. You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. I'm your bluesologist from Toronto, Canada. We have been listening to an interview that I did 2 weeks ago with Ezili Danto, and I guess we always said when Africa called, Cuba answered, we should also say when Africa called, Haiti answered, because Haiti at one time was sending people and troops all over South America, Venezuela, and all over the world to help liberate African and oppressed people. We are going to play some music now, some spoken word music, and we're gonna be playing
two selections from a young sister by the name of Lori Williams. Sister Liv from D.C. turned me on to this sister, and we're going to listen to her, and we're going to come back and deal with her at another date, but we're going to give you a little taste of Lori Williams, and we're going to begin the 3 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. with the words and music of Lori Williams from, I guess it used to be Chocolate City, but I don't know what it is now. I haven't been to D.C., but I understand it's a whole new ball game. But this is Lori Williams.
Awaken love. Open your eyes to a new day. Awaken love. Little boy, grow to be a good man. Prove wrong, society, and those with minds made up for you to fail. Little girl, little girl, womanhood is in demand for your great dreams. Follow the road that leads to your destiny. Clichés have been spoken for both of you, passed down through generations. But prayer, prayer makes the difference. Await new mercies in the eclipse of the soul. Awaken love. that elevated state of being. What is the wonder? The wonder is life. The many wonders of life in a perfect world.
You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhura Radio. This is the bluesologist Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And this is International Women's History Month, and we are paying tribute to women, pardon me, in general, African women in particular. And we're getting ready to listen to Shirley Brown, Jewel, and Marlena Shaw. And these three women have a lot to say. Shirley Brown and Jewel are going to be doing a song called Woman to Woman. And Marlena Shaw is going to sing a song called Go Away, Little Boy. And I'm certain you will get a kick out of all of this music. And stay tuned for Tiki Mercury Clark at 3:30. So you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio.
Hello. May I speak to Barbara? Barbara, this is Shirley. You might not know who I am, but the reason I'm calling you is because I was going through my old man's pockets this morning, and I just happened to find your name and number. So woman to woman, I don't think it's being any more than fair than to call you and let you know where I'm coming from. Now, Barbara, I don't know how you're going to take this, but whether you be cool or come out of a bag on me, see, it really doesn't make any difference. But it's only fair that I let you know that the man you're in love with, he's mine. From the top of his head to the bottom of his feet, the bed he sleeps in, and every piece of food he eats. You see, I make it possible. The clothes on his back, I buy them. The car he drives, I pay the note every month. So I'm telling you these things to let you know how much I love that man. And woman to woman, I think you'll understand just how much I'll do to keep him. Woman to woman, if you've ever been in love, then you know. If you were in my shoes, wouldn't you have done the same thing too? Whoa, woman to woman, can't you see where I'm coming from? Woman to woman, ain't that the same thing? Should I just step aside and let her take what's rightfully mine? Oh, woman to woman, was I right or was I wrong? I ain't gonna let understand. I love that man, and he's mine. I'm talking to you, woman to woman. You should be woman enough to understand.
To woman, and my name is Lachelle Sanders, and today's show is about men. It's about the dogs that bark on their women. No man deserves more than one woman. Am I right? So today we tell you.
Hello. May I speak to Yolanda? Yeah, Yolanda, what's up? This is Jewel. I know you know who I am, cause I just star 69'd you back. The reason you dialed my number, I don't know. But ain't no man living here. This is my place. So woman to woman, I didn't think it was being any more than fair than for me to call you back and let you know how I was feeling. See, Yolanda, the truth is I don't give a damn about how you taking this. Cause a real woman wouldn't be sitting up there trying to play on nobody's phone anyway. But it really doesn't make any difference. Only right for me to let you know that the man you in love with is sprung on a real bomb from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. I'm what he loves, and he loves the food that he eats. You see these rings on my fingers? Wear yours. I got a brand new car, and you on the bus. Yolanda, check this out.
Done. I expressed to you the joy I felt when I realized that I had found the perfect man for me. The man who could make me feel all the things I felt a woman should feel. I said, darling, I want to be the perfect woman for you. I got myself a 3-year subscription to Essence magazine. Read it from cover to cover. You know I wanted to be perfect for him. I said, black is beautiful. Just keep getting up. Together we can make it. It's gonna be all right. Forget about what society says is or isn't, or what can or cannot be. Keep getting up. He quit his job. Came home one day with 14 mirrors. Some Afro sheen, some Afro clean, some Afro fluid, some Afro do it to it. Gonna sit up in the room and look at the black beautiful. Check out the boy, mother's love, mother's love. I said, well, my darling, I hate to get in your business, you know what I mean, but I mean, what about a job? I mean, what about the gas and the electricity and well, not that I am equating a job with your manhood, you understand, but I mean, you did have a choice in this. He said, I got to get myself together. I'm tired of working for somebody else. I made me take out a small businessman's loan and open up a head shop. I said, but that's not bringing no money in. I mean, he said, you working, ain't you? Get off my back. I don't know. You see, I wasn't raised like that, y'all. I mean, I figure if I got to get up and go to work every day, then every able-bodied in the household's supposed to get up and go, at least looking. I know it ain't easy out there, but I said, now, if for some reason you feel that you can no longer be the man that I thought you were at the beginning of our relationship, then I got this one thing to lay on you, my sweet. Why don't you just go away, little boy? You see, I am not supposed to sit up here alone in the dark with some mirrors and no money and no you. Ooh, I know, I understand, I recognize the fact that your lips, oh, so sweet, ow! But it don't look like our lips shine. We'll never have another chance to meet. I think I can find myself another man. And I know what to do when I got somebody who can be true. So why don't you run, 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 run away, little boy. Let the doorknob hit you where the door. Should have bit you, little boy, 'cause you're hurting me more every minute that you delay. Hey, hey. 'Cause when you need me like this, whoa, baby, you're getting kind of hard for me to understand. So my man, just go on away, just go on away, just go on away, little boy, before I do something rash. Oh, run, 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 little boy. Find yourself another set of airplane strings, little boy, 'cause you're hurting me more every minute that you delay. Ooh, hey, hey, hey. Oh, when you need me, 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 when you walk through some title like this, you're getting just a little bit too hard for me to resist. So why don't you go on away, little boy? All right. Why don't you just leave me alone? You know what I mean? Go ahead and take your. magazine. Let's just go on, get out of my life. Now don't stand so close to me when you're trying to get that last goodbye kiss. I know your moves now. What the? Don't talk to me like this. And don't kiss my eyelids like that. And please don't suck my earlobes like that. And don't. Well, look. You think you could get a job by Thursday? You promise? Yeah, you ain't gonna fool me this one. Then you might as well stay. Might as well stay. Don't go away. You can be my man one more time. And this time I'm gonna try harder too, sweetie. This time I'm gonna be sweeter.
You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. This is International Women's History Month, and we are paying tribute to women from the African continent, from the African diaspora in particular, and women in general, all oppressed women. I did not say all of God's children, but all oppressed women. We pay tribute. We're paying tribute to them. I believe in class struggle, so I don't want to big up the ruling class, and definitely don't want to have. I don't have anything nice to say about Hillary Clinton. I'm not a fan of hers at all. But that's neither here nor there. That's my personal opinion, and I'm certain that most of the people that listen to who are radio would support that position. So, and I have a lot of freedom on this broadcast. Marlena Shaw, we heard from Joelle out of, I think Joelle is out of Detroit, but that song was from the Death Row label, Suge Knight's label, and we kicked the set off with Shirley Brown out of, Shirley Brown is out of the South. Something tells me she may be from Jackson, Mississippi, but Woman to Woman is her signature song. And we're going to be speaking with Tiki Mercury Clark shortly, but right now we wanted to listen to one of my favorite singers. This is Nancy Wilson, and this is another storyteller, another song that I'm certain the women listening to this show will love. This is Guess Who I Saw Today with Nancy Wilson.
With you gentlemen, the audience, about this song. I told you I was singing this song to you, never for you. Now I admit in the past, I led you to believe that if ever I were to find myself in this situation, I would make this serious effort to conduct myself to the man of this song. So just however, I lied. No, I don't play this. I do not play this. But I do care about you, and because I care, I would like to just suggest merely that those of you gentlemen in the audience who see fit choose to insist on being indiscreet, you really ought to do yourself a favor and have the kind of female at home who can handle all that. And I'm talking lady in cap, sweet lady, nice lady, kind, patient. Patient, tolerant, considerate, and understanding. On the real side, you need someone who is relatively naive and basically stupid. You need all that if you really expect to hear. You're so late getting home from the office. You see? Now, I am supposed to say, darling. Did you miss your train? Were you caught in the rain? No to bother to explain. Can I fix you a quick martini? As a matter of fact, I will have with you. today, my dear. I went in town, I shopped around for something new, and I thought I'd stop and have a bite when I was through. I looked around for something showed me to a dark, secluded corner, and as my eyes became accustomed to the gloom, I saw two people at the bar who were so in love, and I was clear across the room.
Uhuru, you're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. We were just listening to the music of Nancy Wilson, Go Away. Well, that was Marlene Shaw. Guess who I saw today? It was Nancy Wilson, and that was a live rendition of Nancy Wilson at her best, one of my favorite singers. Joining me on the line is Tiki Mercury Clark, who is a multi-talented Canadian-born singer, pianist, storyteller, lyricist, composer, and cultural historian. And she has become a keeper of the African ancestral wisdom, and in harmony with tradition, a vessel for the often hard-to-find authentic African North American musical expression called jazz. And we are joined by Tiki Mercury Clark. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm great today. The sun is shining. The snow and ice is melting. I'm very happy.
Sun is shining. There's plenty of life. Okay. But,
you know, by the way, that is one of my favorite songs, too, that Nancy Wilson.
Guess who I saw? Yeah, that
yeah,
is. That
she's
is
one of my yeah. favorite song stylists.
This is kind of off topic, but I took my son to see Nancy Wilson when he was 11 years old. It was Joe Williams, Nancy Wilson, and he wanted to go backstage and meet her.
I was just going to say, was he ever the same afterwards?
he was 11 years old. And Nancy,
yeah, that age, too, with boys, oh, my goodness.
Well, Nancy,
she blew his mind.
Nancy messed his little 11-year-old mind up, boy. But I guess, you know, the first thing I wanted to talk about, this is International Women's Month, and there is a woman, I guess you wanted to talk about, Ms. Gwen Johnston. She was the other half of Leonard Johnston, and they put together Third World Books and Crafts, which was a great bookstore in Toronto. And she was born here. Lenny was born here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Gwen's roots were in the U.S. South, and she had some. I think she had some. One side of her family might have been, something tells me, St. Kitts, but she was also related to Doug Richardson, who was a great musician, and also related to Doug's father. I can't remember Doug's father's name, but he ran in the Olympics with Jesse Owens. Help me, Tiki.
No,
his father ran in the Olympics, 36 Olympics, with he won the Toronto Arts, not Toronto Arts, but the Harry Jerome Awards when they first started. I wrote an article about him in the Globe and Mail, but it'll come to me. But I think he wanted to talk about, you know, Ms. Johnston today, And
well, when I was thinking about International Women's Month, being up here in Canada, quite often, whenever they focus on our community, the earlier residents of the community are kind of ignored. We
right.
have a lot of emphasis on people who have come up since the large Caribbean immigration coming up
in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, right?
Yeah, and those who were here before that have sort of been lost in the shuffle. We've had the situation, I mentioned it before, where within, a very short, like within a decade, you had the balance within our community move from the majority of Black people being people who have been here for a while to they're suddenly becoming a very small minority within
right.
a minority. And they just sort of been lost altogether. And I also wanted to get away from always focusing on the ones that are considered, and I use it in quotes, leaders. We seem to look at those people who have the ear and the eye of the majority population and determine that they must be leaders, that these are the ones who, and quite often they're actually more celebrities or they're very high-profile members of our community, but they're not necessarily influential leaders and they're not necessarily even representatives of our community. So I wanted to get away from that as well. I'd like to sort of shine the light on an unsung hero and the collective progress, if you want to call it that, that we've undergone as a community. And a lot of the things that women who don't have their names in politics, who don't have their names in the newspaper, et cetera, but what they've collectively done for our community that is usually far more outreaching, far more influential than the folks who have the high-profile names. So Lynn Johnston was one of those people, because people will often talk about Lynn Johnston in Third World Book and Craft, but they don't really realize that it was a partnership. It was not just him. And in fact, to a great extent, she had to keep it going because
he was on the road.
Years, he was still working on the trains.
Right.
And he was out of town a lot. So everything was falling on her, as well as raising children and what have you. And it was a bit unusual in those days. And one of the things that she had said over the years, actually, is that in her mind, and a number of other Black women have said this too, in many ways, Black women were liberated beyond where white women had been. If you talk about in terms of some of the responsibilities that they took over, what they had to do in terms of being working mothers, some of the responsibilities and the power that they had even within certain social structures like our community organizations or churches and things of this nature, where they were the ones who were looking after the money and things of this nature. These are things that later when feminism in its second movement came along, they were saying, no, this is what white women wanted to be able to do. They, we were already doing it. So,
I don't want to cut you, but I want to ask you this question. Don't you feel that African women are suffer from triple oppression? Some would argue that our women are. When I say our women, I'm speaking of African women. Worldwide are mm-hmm. on the bottom of the totem pole totally in terms of, I think a lot of men always used to get mad at me when I quoted Thomas Sankara said that, even under apartheid, a brother could beat on his woman,
Uh-huh. So, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And because of what I just said doesn't mean that
okay.
we were liberated. It doesn't mean
okay.
that we had actual freedom or that we had power or what have you, but there were a lot of things that we were routinely doing that at least white middle class women were, you know, apparently striving to be able to do. So we had to have a certain amount of strength. And if you look at our cultural history going back to the continent, the dynamic between men and women and the place that women had in society and how things were structured was very, very different from the European concept. You know, we ran the marketplaces. We usually handled the money and had the economic control of the family and the neighborhood and things of this nature. And in fact, one of the ways that that there was interference in traditional cultural ways in Africa was when European powers came in and they started doling out money to men to supposedly go to the community or, you know, looking along patriarchal lines, when that was not the way that we had run things. So,
I wanted to cut you one more time. Is it true that in African societies, some African societies were matriarchal, and on the whole question of polygamy, once again, a lot of my brothers get mad at me when I point this out, is that in some cultures in Africa, polygamy was cool. However, some societies said that, or some ethnic groups said that the woman had the right to say, okay, you can have another wife or you cannot have another wife. If she said no, that means you could not have a polygamous relation. Is that true?
From my research, it is.
Right.
And I'm glad you said some, because, of course, we have to remember that Africa is not a country. It's an entire continent.
Continent, right.
With a whole lot of people with you know, various differences and similarities and what have you. But a different formation, a different foundation for polygyny. Polygamy is more than one spouse. And from a traditional African indigenous sense, so this is nothing to do with Islam, nothing to do with Christianity or Judaism, it's not religious. From the cultural perspective, polygamy was and is a cultural response to a societal problem. And the problem was an imbalance in available partners for men and women. And because of that attitude, they could incorporate polygyny, which is more than one wife for one husband, as well as polyandry, which is more than one husband for
right,
one
right.
wife.
Right? I'm laughing because I remember it was a brother from this African nationalist from the U.S. came up, and a woman raised that to him, and, you know, he flipped out, and she was basically beating him up in terms of the argument, but he basically was just coming from, I don't think he had done any research.
Mm-hmm. Right. One thing I'd like to just sort of throw out there, because I don't look at any of the African societies that haven't been matriarchal. That's a word that that came from outsiders who came into the country, outsiders who came with a patriarchal view and with a very dichotomous view as well, which Europeans have and to a great extent Arabs have as well, whereas something is either this or it's that. It's short or it's tall. It's fat or it's thin. It's like there's no in-between. And it just sort of shifts one from one extreme to the other. And so when they came in with a patriarchal attitude and they found societies where women, as I said, were running the markets, where women owned the land, where women, yes, could tell men, no, you cannot have another wife. They could actually even suggest, I think this woman would be a good wife. And variations of things like that where they were allowed to, or not just allowed, but as part of a society where they had training, where they were able to, exercise their brains and what have you, and the girl children were not killed, as happened in Europe so often. when they saw these things, their interpretation was, okay, if they're not patriarchal, then they must be matriarchal, because in their view, it's either one or the other. You have to have that power dynamic. The idea that it could be balanced in some ways, and that it is neither patriarchal or matriarchal, just didn't even occur to them, so that label got stuck. But in actual fact, there's systems of checks and balances within the society, so that even when you have, for example, a ruling king, right, or some kind of leader in that way, that is the public face of a community, they still had to answer to a committee of women who actually were the ones who chose who was going to be able to be on the throne and could also unchoose you if you did not behave yourself. Or there were various other ways that there was a division of power so that nobody legitimately could rule over others. And that kind of balance and power and that kind of cultural norm that you have to have that balance, that there's that, you know, we're more familiar with the Chinese expression, the yin and yang, you know, that right. You have to have those two things for completeness and for wholeness.
Let me cut you, Tiki, because I wanted to let people know that I'm speaking with Tiki Mercury Clark, but I can hear you, but you're kind of muddy. Is there anything you can do with your phone and so we can get you better?
Is that any better?
That is about 75% better. Yes, ma'am.
75% better?
Yeah, that's good.
Is that better?
That's better.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sounds good. And I have manners. I was raised by an African people from Louisiana, so I had to say I was, you know, apologize for that.
There's nothing wrong with manners.
Okay. I didn't cut you, but when you finished that, I basically wanted to can we go back and talk about Gwen? And there was another woman who I've always thought that she really got a raw deal. Jean Daniels. I think she got a raw deal in terms of she's been written out of our history, but I think she was a major player in the city, in this city's history, and we should have a building for her. There's a street named after her. I mean, she's one of the most important people that I've ever met in this city, I would believe, as well as Miss Johnston, who, by the way, when I got married, my mother was not able to make the marriage, and Miss Johnson was stood in for my mother, so I knew Miss Johnson very well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, yeah, Miss Johnson, she stood in, and Gwen always looked after, she looked after me, you know, always. Miss Johnston, she sort of adopted me, like I used to tell you that, you know, I'd go into Lenny's store and Lenny would kick me out if we'd have an argument. Miss Johnson would always bring me back, you know.
You'd be banned, and then she'd say, okay. Yeah. Well, the store was very important. I mean, it was important in the development of Toronto, of the Toronto Black community, of the GTA, actually, the Greater Toronto Area. I believe, though, that it was actually the first Afrocentric bookstore in North America.
There was a bookstore in Los Angeles called the Aquarian Spiritual Center, which was run by a couple out of Los Angeles, and they were very much like Lenny and Gwen, but they were mystical. They had African books. You're right. They were not Afrocentric. They were more on the spiritual tip. No, so
and Pan Africanist as well. The Third World Bookstore was very much Pan Africanist as well.
Right.
And I remember any time I went there, I was running into people from all over the place, all over the U.S. and Canada and overseas, who would make it a point of going there, And the fact also that Gwen was, I think, important, as you mentioned, even with yourself, but she was a nurturer of a lot of minds. It wasn't just Len. You know, she was doing that as well. And she was doing it, when I think of her being alone in the store and running things with Len out of town at a time when they were getting bomb threats. I mean, they would get threats from the Western Guard, which is sort of one of the
similar
to KKK up here.
Right.
You know, and other folks like that. This is a courageous woman.
Yeah, and a courageous woman, and also we went to see James, and who she loved music. I remember we saw James Brown once, and I went to see James Brown with her. She loved James Brown with a passion.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the show, and James Brown, it was Wilson Pickett. And she said, Otis, you want to see the show again? I'll pay for you again. So it was either James or Wilson Pickett. And also, I remember going to Buffalo, New York, and see, she loved Smokey. We took Lenny, Gwen, and then we went to see Smokey Robinson together. And of course, they were jazz fanatics, you know.
Right, yes, I remember that. I remember that very much.
And also, before we get off this phone, I basically want to know that Quincy Jones did his research at Third World Bookstore. A lot of his books that he when he studied the Roots, he did the soundtrack for Roots. His research was done at Third World Books. Michael Jackson still owes money. Lenny Johnston still owes Gwen and Lenny money. The Jacksons went in there. Peter Tosh, Jane Cortez, Yusu Indor. We used to have receptions for everybody when they came. They were always held at the Third World Bookstore.
Right. Yeah, it was very much a very, very important place. And like a lot of other women of that generation.
Didn't get the credit.
He was in the middle of it and very quietly.
But Miss Johnston was... We should also mention that there's a bench named after there's a bench for them on Bathurst. If you ever come to Toronto, Bathurst and Bloor, Sandra Whiting and Ita Sadu were able to convince the city there's a bench, a park bench for Gwendolyn and Leonard Johnston, right?
Right.
Right.
At the Bathurst Street subway station.
Right, right. I don't know if you were there that day when they...
I was.
Yeah, you were there. Yeah, you were there. I remember. There was a nice day, and Joe Pantalone, I think, who ran for mayor at one point, I think he was the one that was presided over that particular situation, right? And could you just... we have to go off at 4 o'clock when... we need a few minutes in order to clear the air. And before I let you go, I wanted to say that I would like to thank Lisa Watson for teching the show today. And I wanted you to give us some information about Jean Daniels. I think she's really been neglected.
Jean Daniels, the background of her, I don't know that much. I knew her... when I
was
really younger.
Nova Scotia, and she went moved to Montreal, then she came to Toronto.
Ah, okay. Right. It's one of those things when you know someone as a child, but you don't necessarily know them as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that, and there really hasn't been that much written about her.
I'll give you an exclusive right now. I have, I found a tape that Roger McTeer did a film about her, and I found the tape, and I'm going to get it digitized and, you know, try to make, at least put it on the radio so people can hear. We actually have her voice, you know.
Wonderful. Wonderful. That would be great. I knew her from when she had started the Library of Black People's Heritage. I mean, I met her before that.
Right.
As it turns out, when I was very young, I lived on Henry Street, which is in the Spadina and College area, And one of her good friends was the mother of a child I was friends with. So she would come around quite often. I really didn't know who she was to the community because I was like 7 years old. But so we found her an interesting woman, and we would have these chats and what have you. And then it was years later, just as I was, I guess, finishing up middle school in grade 8, this Library of Black People's Heritage was started. And I went down, and here is this woman that I had seen when I was much younger. I had been studying African history through my grandfather and continued on as much as I could, self-taught. And so I went through a little course with them, and it ended up being a little course because it was a lot that I already knew. And I was vetted and sort of given a stamp of approval, and I was one of three speakers in the city who was qualified, according to their standards, to go out and talk about certain aspects of African history.
Let the listeners know that you
had gotten to
you
know
had
a
column.
Better.
I want to cut you and be very rude, but I want to let people know that you, there was a paper up here called Contrast, which was a black weekly. You were the youngest person. You had a column in there. I remember we talked about that.
Yes, I did. That was a trip, too. Sometime we have to talk about Contrast.
Right.
And Al Hamilton. Yes. He is another, actually, he's another one who's, you know, unsung, that is
he's
so
unsung.
Influential because of who came through Contrast and who is now out there in the public eye.
That's right.
And, you know, not enough people know how they got there.
From Cameron Bailey, who was the Toronto International Film Festival. You have Royce and James, who's writing for the Toronto Star.
Hamlin Grange.
You have Olivia Grange Walker, who was the Minister of Culture in Jamaica for many, many, many years. Harold Hoyt, who started The Nation in Barbados. That was a big, big newspaper in Barbados. Daryl White.
Was Jolly there?
Denham Jolly bought it, yeah. Denham Jolly and went on to buy the radio, first black radio station here, but he and Al Hamilton were like, as the Jamaicans would say, key spars of the Africans in America would say, they were Ace Boone Coons, yeah. They were closer than close, as Gene Carn might say. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything
a very long list of people who were affiliated with Contrast.
We have to bring you back very soon because we have to finish this conversation. But is there anything else you'd like to add? Because we only have about 2 minutes.
No, I would just like to thank you though for just keeping on. Yeah, you've been at this very steadily and very, conscientiously, and I want you to know that it's appreciated, and what you're doing is important, and will you please listen to me and write a book, or two or three? Please. At least put it down.
I
have it for you if you need to. Yeah.
I have a book.
Don't take all you got, with you, please.
No, I just got turned down. There's a compilation book. I'm not going to mention the publisher, but I just got somebody just told me it was unpublishable. So, but I'm going to another one starting. I'm putting together something, sending it to another publisher. Yeah.
Well, right. If no one else will do it, do it yourself.
That's a whole other issue because I was speaking with the brother from Black Classic Press, and I wanted him to publish it, and he basically told me to publish it yourself after you try to get it published through, the not the majors, but middle publishing house, because that was just his advice to me. So I'm taking his advice, but I did want to go self publish, but I'm going to try, and if it doesn't work, then I'll do it myself.
Yeah, and don't forget e-books either.
E-books is a good thing, but Ms. Mercury Clark, We got 2 minutes.
Okay.
We're in Canada, so I'm going to say I'm going to have to get the puck out of here.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for this interview.
Well, I appreciate your being asking me, and I'd love to do it again.
Yes, ma'am. Take care.
All right.
And you have been listening to Dire Spoke Music on Uhura Radio. We will see you in the whirlwind. I'd like to thank Lisa Watson for technical production today, and we will see you in the whirlwind. We will be black next Sunday. Take care.